Parshas Shemini.
So you don't usually get to give on Parshas Shemini because it's right after Pesach, and right after Pesach is usually means like Pesach was Tuesday, Wednesday, or something like that, and it's very, very hard, you know, to get everything in, and then people are all upset, they can't come because right before Shabbat, whatever it is. Regardless, we're giving on Parshas Shemini, and it's not on animals this year. Usually it's on animals, but I decided not to do anything to do with animals. I decided, yeah, I actually once again yesterday I got written, poured on. No, Brookfield, good times. Brookfield. Bayomer al Aaron, you said to Aaron, Kaklacha Eagles, the second pasuk of the parsha after Bayom Hashemini. Bayomer al Aaron, Kaklacha Eagle ben Bakr lechatos, v'ayel le'ola t'mimim v'hakriv le'Hashem. Aaron was told you have to take an eagle ben Bakr, so a calf, you know, a regular calf, lechatos is a korban lechatos, v'ayel le'ola, and an ayel should be for the ola t'mimim v'hakriv le'Hashem and bring it in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then it says, "Val b'nei Yisrael t'daber lemo," you should say b'nei Yisrael, kichu sir yizim lechatos. Take a goat for a chatos, egel v'cheves b'nei shana t'mim l'ola, and then an egel and a keves that is a year old that are perfect as an ola. Now here's the deal. A chatos is always for something that they did wrong. So there's a different korban chatos that b'nei Yisrael are bringing than for what Aaron's bringing. Aaron was bringing as a chatos an egel ben bakar, a calf, right? But b'nei Yisrael are bringing se'irizim. Let's start with b'nei Yisrael. Why did they bring a se'irizim? Rashi doesn't comment on it. What's the reason why they bring the se'irizim? So the Sifri says that it's a kapara for Yosef HaTzadik. What happened to Yosef HaTzadik? His cloak was dipped into goat blood. It was dipped into goat blood and it was thrown down inside. Now, that's a great kapara. Why now? Why now, when you're making the Beis Hamikdash, all of a sudden it's got to be an eagle, and we have to give a kapara for Yosef HaTzadik? Where did Yosef HaTzadik all of a sudden come into play? We've had many, many years up until now to give a kapara for this blood of the goat. All of a sudden we got to give it right now on the eighth day. What does this day have to do with anything? So here's pshat. Because they're trying to get over the eagle Azov. They're trying to get over on the eagle Azov. Says the Meshech Chachma. B'nai Yisrael always had a taina. They had a claim as to why they were able to sell Yosef. What their purpose was in selling Yosef. Here's their claim. This is what they were saying. They said the following. They said, listen, if Yosef has a problem, he should come to us. He shouldn't go to Yaakov and hide it in front of their father, in front of our father, and like go to him instead. He should come to us directly. Come up to me and tell me that he thinks that we did something wrong. But don't go to someone else. I mean, this is just cheap. You're going to go to dad every time? You're going to go run to the teacher every time I do something to you? Just tell me that I did something wrong, and I'll understand, especially B'nai Yisrael. B'nai Yisrael are on a level. We're not talking about stam people. We're talking about the shvatim. The shivtei kol. If Yosef said it goes up to them and tells the musr, said the shvatim, we would have accepted it. We would have been mekabel the musr. That taina worked. Not to punish them, or anyone near that time, until the Egel Azov came around. When the Egel Azov came around, and the Erev Rav and part of B'nai Yisrael started getting involved. So what happened exactly? You had a guy get up and give Musar. And what happened to that guy that gave Musar? He was killed. Hur got up and tried to give the Musar. And he was immediately killed. By who? By all the other Shvatim. By all the other people who saw Hur was trying to do this, and we can't take this guy. We can't take this guy giving Musar. Up until that point, it doesn't matter. Hur was from Shevi Yehuda.
But not from Yosef HaTzadik.
I know, then it would have been unbelievable. But here's the pshat of the Meshech Chochma. Because Hur gave Musar, and it didn't work, and they killed him, so they went back. If Yosef HaTzadik would have given Musar, what would have happened then? Yosef HaTzadik also would have been killed. So said that he saw a week with the said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I can't allow Yosef HaTzadik to give Musar. Your taina now falls off, so now you owe something back for Yosef HaTzadik. So what do you bring? The Sirizim. That's what you bring. You have to bring a Sirizim right now. What's the lesson we learn from that? The whole Parsha is all about this. It's the same as the Egel for Aaron. What did Aaron do? He made an Egel Azov for Klal Yisrael. He was the one who created the Egel Azov. So what does he do as a kapara? Bring an Egel. Bring an Egel as your korban. Says Rashi, it's Mida Keneged Mida. Shemachaper lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Egel's Al Meisa Egel Shasa. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give him a kapara on that Egel that he made with this Egel that he brought. A lesson of Mida Keneged Mida. You know, you might forget what you might have done, what you've done in your past. Somebody that you made fun of, somebody that you said something to, you may forget about it. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't forget. He's like an elephant. And elephants never forget. No matter how hard they try, there's nothing they can do. There were two bachurim in a yeshiva called Toras Emes in London. It was during World War II when Rabbi Moshe Schneider started this yeshiva. It was very hard for them. I mean, think about it. World War II, London's being bombed. And he lived in a certain part of London. They have to move the yeshiva to Gateshead for a little bit because it was just too much when the Nazis were really taking care of England. There was nothing. The yeshiva was... They were hungry just like everybody else. I mean, nobody had food back then. There was nothing. And it was a young yeshiva. I mean, the high school kids around that age for them to be able to be there. And there was no bread. There was no place around the area of the yeshiva where they could get bread because what were they going to do? Everybody was hungry. There wasn't enough stuff, especially for charity cases like yeshiva. So what were they going to do? They were going to have to close down. So there was a family by the name of Grudzinski who lived in Golders Green. They decided that they were going to donate any bread that was 3 days old. All the bread 3 days old, they were going to give it to the yeshiva. If it wouldn't sell after 3 days, they'd give it to them. I know now, you think like 3-day-old bread, where to go. But back then, 3-day-old bread was unbelievable, especially during times of war. So they offered it. But the problem was, the Golders Green was far away from the yeshiva. So one bachur in the yeshiva had to be chosen to go on the bus, to go all the way to Golders Green, pick up the bread, and bring it back twice a day. And that was a big feat. I mean, it was a lot of time that you had to spend, and it wasn't done during Seder time. It had to be done before Seder started or after Seder ended, and it couldn't be done while they were in the middle of yeshiva learning. Otherwise, you know, a lot of people would have volunteered for the job. So one boy got up there, and he said, I'll do it. I'll do it every day. I'll go twice a day, before and afterward. Before and afterward. He went every single day and brought the yeshiva bread every single day. There was another boy. Both of them were named Moshe, by the way. There was another boy who went, and he was well known as the person who always woke everybody up. He was the vekker in the morning. It was very hard, especially in the times where there were air raid sirens that went off at night. People were very tired. He would get up extra early every single day and wake up every single person in the yeshiva. Only one person would go around to every single bed. And when they said to him, maybe you should take another guy with you, you shouldn't do it by yourself, he said, absolutely not. I have to go. I want to go by myself. I want to do this by myself. And he used to wake up extra early and go around to every single bed, waking everybody up. The Rosh Yeshiva got up, Rav Schneiderman, got up and he gave him Moser Shmuz. And he said, two Moshes in this yeshiva. Two Moshes in this yeshiva. The Moshe that goes to get the bread, I give him a bracha that'll never have a need for parnasa for the rest of his life. The Moshe that wakes everybody up, I give him a bracha that he'll awaken everybody with his Torah. The one who used to get the bread is Moshe Reichlin. Famous Reichlin. Family, it obviously has gotten, it was fulfilled. Okay, that's number one. The second Moshe was Rav Moshe Sternbach. Rav Moshe Sternbach, who's a tremendous Talmud Chacham, who's still alive today, obviously, who still gives his Piskei Din, who awakens the world with his Torah. Rav Moshe Reichman was told about this whole story. He said, oh, what I would have given to be able to trade jobs with that guy, to be able to make sure that I would have been that way. I'm not so sure that he really meant that, but regardless, that was the story behind him. Listen to this. I'll give you another Mita Kenega Mita story. That's one Mita Kenega Mita story, that type of idea. Rav Moshe, I read this story, I cracked up. I read it in Shul. I showed it to my father. The craziest story. Don't worry, it wasn't during davening. It was during one of those times where everybody's like sitting around and just whatever it is. Rav Moshe Wee met a Talmud Chacham who once met the Chafetz Chaim. He saw the Chafetz Chaim. Now the Chafetz Chaim was very weak. He was 83 years old at the time. I want you to think, 83-year-old man from Europe. Okay, 83-year-old man from Europe. He met the Chafetz Chaim, and the Chafetz Chaim motioned to him. Like motioned to him over here, but the Chafetz Chaim was very weak. He couldn't speak. It was very hard for him to talk. He like motioned to him. He tried to bring him over. So the Talmud Chacham, this Talmud, came over to the Chafetz Chaim. He wanted to hear what the Chafetz Chaim had to say. So he bent all the way near. Chafetz Chaim motioned to him, open up my mouth. Open up my mouth. Chafetz Chaim couldn't open up his mouth on his own. That's how weak he was. He said, open up my mouth. So Talmud was like, I'm not touching your mouth, right? He's going to, you know, touch. He was so scared to touch the Chafetz Chaim's mouth. Who touches the Chafetz Chaim's mouth? No one's going to touch his mouth. He said, I can't. Chafetz Chaim motioned him. He said, no. So when the Chafetz Chaim goes, no, you do it. So the guy opened up the Chafetz Chaim's mouth. He opened up the mouth, and he saw two rows of perfect white teeth. This is before Colgate, whitening. You know, this is before all this stuff. How many times do you think Chafetz Chaim brushed his teeth per year? Ever? There's no way. Absolutely no way. Every single tooth exactly in place. No braces. No braces. Pearly white. Absolutely. Like a child's mouth. Like a child's mouth. That's what it looked like. It looked like a child's mouth after coming from the dentist, after having all the cleaning and everything. That's what it looked like, the Chafetz Chaim's mouth. So he looked at it, and the Chafetz Chaim slowly said to him, count them. Count them. His teeth. So he counted them. One, two, three, four, five, went all the way through, counted to 32. How many 83-year-old men from Europe do you think kept all 32 of their teeth? Especially white and everything like that. So Chavetz Chaim waited for him to finish, and he smiled, and he said, I'm careful with the mouth that Hashem gave me, so Hashem's careful with my mouth. That was the line of the Chavetz Chaim. You won't need a Keneged Mida? That's awesome, Mida Keneged Mida. Then look at my mouth. See how bad mine is. It's such an unbelievable lesson. What an unbelievable lesson. I can't imagine anyone would ever forget anyone doing that to them, let alone the Chavetz Chaim being able to do that to somebody. It's just an unreal lesson. That's Mida Keneged Mida. I got my final Mida Keneged Mida story, Rav Yonis Naivshitz. I happen to love Rav Yonis Naivshitz. Absolute genius. Nothing like Rav Yonis Naivshitz in the entire world. When Rav Yonis Naivshitz first got married, he was given 3,000 golden. It was a certain type of coin. He was given that at his wedding, as his wedding gift. It was going to be able, 3,000 golden was such a huge, enormous sum. He was going to be able to have as much money as he needed to be able to learn for the next at least 10 years, possibly longer than that. It was such a huge sum for somebody who's just learning in Kollel and not doing anything more. He was going to be able to pay for himself for whatever it was. That was his wedding gift from a certain benefactor. Might have been from his father-in-law. It didn't say in the sefer, but it was his gift to be able to use for whatever he wanted. Where he was learning, doesn't say where he was learning, there was a huge church built right across the street. So he had a chavrusa. This chavrusa's name was Aryeh Leib, I believe. Aryeh Leib, his chavrusa, was very bothered by the church. And he kept saying to Rav Yonis Naivshitz, how are you not bothered? There's a huge church right across the street from the yeshiva. Up until this point, the yeshiva was the highest building around this area. Now they built this church to be huge and to get all around. It's ridiculous. How can this be? How can we let this be? So Rav Yonis Naivshitz didn't care. He's like, come on, let's get back to the Gemara. But Aryeh Leib couldn't take it. So one night, late at night, he went in and he wanted to steal the cross from on top of the bell that goes on top of the church. He climbed up to the top, grabbed the cross, and he started coming down and he wanted to destroy it, but he was caught. He was caught by one of the priests. He was beaten up, thrown into jail. So they let out the coal. He was going to be hung or burned at the stake. I don't know what it is, whatever they call it. He was going to be killed over the next couple days. So a priest who was in charge of this guy's jail cell, he came to the yeshiva and told the Bachrim, he said, listen, I know you guys got money. They were still Jews. So, I know you guys got money. I'll let this guy go if you give me 3,000 golden. Give me 3,000 gold coins, and I promise you I'll let the guy go. That's a huge sum, but it's Pidyon Shvuyim. So, all the Talmidim of the yeshiva got together. They went out all these different places to go find the money, to be able to raise money. 3,000 golden, how are they going to get it? They went to every place they could in town. Rav Yonis Naivshitz realized 3,000 golden, that's the amount of money that I have. He went to his house, took out the money, and brought it back for that priest, and gave the entire sum to the priest. The priest said, that was an hour. How'd you get all the money in an hour? So Rav Yonis Naivshitz says, listen, this is given to me as my wedding present, but I find that this is a good usage of the money. Please let the guy go free. The priest is unbelievably shocked. He said, how would a person do that? You must be the most trustworthy person I've ever met in my life. Rav Yonis Naivshitz says, well, you've known, you know, priests your entire life. Of course. Anyway, that wasn't in the story. Rav Yonis Naivshitz said, listen, it's just what one Jew would do for any other Jew. So 3,000 gold, it means nothing to me as long as the guy goes free. Now, the guy let him go free. The priest found out about it, and they got very, very upset. They went to the guy and they said, how'd the guy go free? And he said, I don't know. You know, he punched me and grabbed my keys and got out, and somehow he got out there. The priest didn't believe him. So they were out for this guy now. The guy was able to escape, ran to his house, grabbed the 3,000 golden plus a lot of other money that he had, and then started to run. And then he thought to himself, this stuff is going to weigh me down. It's a big bag. He doesn't want to be weighed down. He didn't know where to go. Meanwhile, Rav Yonis Naivshitz didn't know what to say to his wife. I mean, 3,000 golden that he had just given away, what was he going to tell his wife? He never asked Rishus because he didn't think his wife would give permission. He said, what am I going to do? So he went out of the city for a day or two. He told his wife, I have to leave for a day or two. I have to think about something. I'll be back. I'll be back soon. And he wanted to think, how should he break it to his wife? What is he going to say that I gave away the 3,000 golden for this? For Peter Shreem, how do you explain it to him?
I got to think about something.
I don't want to. But Jonas was a genius. I don't know how to explain this part. I'll say that. So either way, he left the city for a day or two. Meanwhile, the priest ran over to Rav Yonis Naivshitz's house, because he knew that he was extremely trustworthy. Ran over to the house, knocked on the door, and he said to Rav Yonis Naivshitz, he said to him, Rav Yonis Naivshitz's wife, listen, I need to give you back the 3,000 golden. So the wife is like, what are you talking about? So the priest said, well, you don't know the story? Your husband, etc. I don't have time. Listen, anyway, he gave me 3,000 gulden in order to give you on shvuyim. I'm giving you the money and I'm giving you other stuff. I don't know when I'm going to come back. Take the money for now. If anything happens to me, it's yours. Just take the money for now. You're the only people that I can trust. She said, not a problem. She took it, put it down inside, whatever it was. The priest ran. Later on that day, he was found dead by the river. That means Rav Yonah Sinai just got to keep all the money. Rav Yonah Sinai just came home 2 days later. Came to, oh, it's a priest, come on. So he came back 2 days later. Oh, I forgot this on the line. He comes back 2 days later, and he goes over to his wife, and he's like trying to break it to her. He's like, honey, listen. She said, I know all about it. He's like, oh boy. She said, listen. The guy came back. Let me tell you what happened. She tells him the whole story of what happened. But the honest options, you'd think, would be unbelievably ecstatic. Wow, that's crazy. We got our money back and more. Great story, right? Rabbi Yonah Sinai Pshitz breaks down crying. Breaks down crying. And he yells out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, runs into the basement, and yells out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're throwing my mitzvah back in my face? What did I do wrong? Why didn't you love my mitzvah? What did I do wrong? So he fasted for 3 days. During those 3 days, all 3 days, he fasted day and night. And he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please HaKadosh Baruch Hu, explain to me, what did I do wrong? Tell me what I've done wrong. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered him, in a dream. He got a dream and he was told, the reason why is because you didn't allow anyone else to be involved in this mitzvah of Pinyon Shuyin. You did everything yourself. Because you did everything yourself, you don't deserve to have the mitzvah. And we took away the mitzvah from you. But Jonathan Eichens learned an unbelievable lesson from that. It's the idea of Mida Kenegan Mida. You have to understand what a Kadosh Baruch Hu is doing. Kadosh Baruch Hu is watching everything you do. And yes, this is a huge mitzvah, Pinyon Shuyim. The idea of trying to give that 3,000 golden pieces, all the money that he had in order to get rid of this person, to take care of everything this person needed, to be guaranteed that he was going to be able to get out of jail and everything. What an unbelievable mitzvah. But there was something else that he could have done. He could have gotten other people involved. He could have helped, and other people were willing to get involved. The Talmid were going collecting throughout the entire city. Rabbi Yonah Sinai Pshitz didn't accept any of that money. He went on and did it by himself, said to Kadosh Baruch Hu, I don't want that mitzvah. For sure, this is an unbelievable statement about Bnei Yisrael. This is a statement that applies to everybody. He says the following. He says, you know, there are four different types. There are four different types of people. People. Things in this world. There's domain. There's someach, chai, and medaber. The very lowest level is domain. That's something that sounds like a rock or a table. Something that doesn't move. Something that has nothing to do with anything. Something that's out there. Someach is the next level up, but someach is at least a little bit better. It has a little bit of life, like an animal. It's an inanimate, thank you. Something inanimate, but something that grows. Something that grows from the ground. The next level is a chai, like a tree. That's a plant. Chai, for those botanists out there. Chai, the next level, is going to be something that is alive. Something that is fully alive. Some type of animal, or whatever it is. Some type of animal that's alive. A mammal, a bird, a fish, or whatever it is, an insect. All those are in the level of chai. And the top level, the greatest level that we have, is medaber. Medaber. And in that level of medaber, of a person that speaks, is two different levels. There's medaber of those that have a neshama, and those that don't have a neshama. There are ways of gaining a higher neshama than other people, whatever it is. If you want to say it's Jews and non-Jews, I'm not so sure that's the proper terminology, but a way of a person with a neshama and a person without a neshama. Here's what Rav Shor says. Rav Shor brings down a pasuk at the very, very end of the parsha. He brings down at the very, very end of the parsha, he says the following. He says, look at this pasuk. It says, Al tishaktu es nafshos lechem, in Perek Yud Aleph Mem Gimel. Al tishaktu es nafshos lechem, don't make yourselves disgusting. B'chol asharet hashoritz, with all the bugs that are on the ground, by eating bugs. V'lo setamu behem, don't become tummy with them, and eat mesem bum, because you will be disgusted by them. Then the next pasuk, why? Ki ani Hashem Elokeichem, because I am Hashem your God. V'yizkadishtam, I've made you holy, v'yizem kidoshim, and you will be holy. Ki kadoshani, because I am holy, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu. V'lo setamu es nafshos lechem, b'chol asharet. Don't be metame yourselves in all the bugs that are there on the ground. Asks Rav Shor, why are you giving the reason in the next pasuk and adding on another lav, which is a separate lav for a different type of bug, in that same pasuk? Here's what I would have done. I would have said, don't eat bugs because I'm telling you not to. That's it. The lav and the siva. And then, and by the way, there's another lav and you shouldn't eat other bugs either. That's what I would have done. Why are you putting the lav and then the reason with the next lav? What are you doing it that way for? Says for sure the following. This is such a true statement. Unbelievable. Does a domain ever die? Does a rock ever die? rot doesn't die. The most you can do is knock it down into little tiny pieces. But it still retains whatever it was before. When it goes down and is destroyed, it's basically the same thing. And in theory, you can always put it back together and make the same rock. What happens when a tzomeach dies? When a plant dies, what happens to it? It withers and it becomes a domain. It becomes dirt. Eventually, the domain ends up becoming dirt. What happens when a chai dies? A chai goes to the next level. That was tzomeach that becomes a domain. Chai ends up becoming even lower than that because a chai, a live animal that dies, masuiach, it becomes smelly. It not only does it become a domain, it's worse than that. It starts to stink. It starts to become horrible. It's horrible smelling. It's disgusting. Something you don't want to touch. You don't want to go anywhere near. It becomes even lower than that because it's a disgusting carcass. A human being that dies is even worse than that. Although in theory, it's very easy to be able to pull up a person, an animal that rotted, take it off the ground and put it somewhere. People have this aversion to human beings that have rotted. A human being that rots is an even lower level than that. And says Rav Shor, a Jew that rots is even lower than a regular human being that rots. When a Jew goes bad, he's worse than anything you can imagine. Worse than anything you can imagine. It really is. The bigger you are, the harder the fall. The longer the fall is. Domim goes like this. A tzomeach goes like that. Then comes the chai, go even down. Midaber even further. And then whatever it is, a Jew goes all the way below that. Only a Jew could think of something like Hollywood. There's nobody else that could do it. There's only a Jew can think of the amount of tuma that Hollywood is all about. Over the past 2 weeks, so I've read some of the news out there. I found there was this actor, this devout Christian actor, who refuses to, he touches other women, but he refuses to be in an intimate scene with any woman, whatever he's in. In any acting position that he's in, he refuses to kiss, to hug, or obviously anything that's disgusting, anywhere. He refuses to do it. Why? Because he's married, and he's a devout Christian, and refuses to go anything. He refuses to do anything. He's an actor, and he was fired from his job. Whatever TV show he's on or movie he's in, I don't have absolutely no idea, but he was fired because they wrote him in to do a certain scene, and refused to do it. He refused to do it. He said, I refuse. And he was fired. That's absolutely such an such amount of tuma that you don't want. I have no idea. But you don't want to keep the sanctity of marriage? Why? For one scene. For one scene. But the sanctity of marriage, don't worry about it. Yeah, he doesn't mean it. He's acting it. He's acting it out. He doesn't really like her. He's just kissing her. What's the big deal? Or worse than that. It's ridiculous. Who else but a Jew could think of that? Who else? Because that has to be a Jew that rots. A Jew that rots becomes worse than anything else. Only he could think of such a thing. That's where Shor comes up. But he didn't give that example. He didn't know that example just yet. Now, I don't want to go into like names. Karl Marx. Only somebody like that. Right. Only Karl Marx can come up with the idea of communism. Only we can come up with communism. Everybody's sitting there like, how about a democracy? How about a great monarchy? No. Communism. And we'll be in charge. It's just ridiculous. Yes. Sigmund Freud is a great example. Let's not go any further. It doesn't get anywhere. Only Jews, I give this example because I thought of it at the time, only a Jew would swim in that Chicago canal over there. Nobody else would do it. Nobody else would even dream of it. Whenever I see a guy with a little canoe, like going in a canoe in that canal, it's like, that's my toilet. That's my toilet. And I see a guy canoeing, I'm just like, are you a Jew? There's no way you could be anybody else. How could anyone else think of such a thing? That's the shot behind this. Once you start going down, you start losing it, you go further and further. Says the Chumash, we'll give you a lot. Don't eat shkatzim, because you know what's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. The reason why is because I am a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and I made you holy. And once that holiness goes away, you're going to just lead yourself to the next sin. So the reason behind why you shouldn't do this is because you're going to do the next wrong thing. One aver is going to lead to another aver, it's going to lead to another aver, it's going to lead to another aver, and it's going to go further. And that's the shot behind the words v'nit meisam bum. It's not written in Rashi, and it's similar in Rashi, but it's not exactly there. V'nit meisam bum, the word is missing. It's missing an aleph. Meisam bum. Says Rashi, it says, afani mitame eschem ba'olam habo v'yeshivaso shamayu. Says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, if you eat these shkatzim, I'll be mitame you in olam haba and yeshiva shamayu. I have no idea what that means. You're going to make you into a cockroach? You'll be the cockroach in yeshiva shamayu? You'll be that bug. I have no idea what it means. But if you eat the shkatzim down here, that's what's going to happen. Says the Chafetz Chaim. There's no aleph to tell you that this stands for Timtum HaLev. What is Timtum HaLev? Here's what Timtum HaLev is. The inability to think things through. The inability to clarify things inside your head. Your head is so confused. How you say it's muddled. It's muddled. I have all these thoughts in my head from all these movies or all these TV shows, all this food that I've eaten and these drinks that I've drunk that have destroyed my ability to think things through in the proper way. As we said from a story of Reb Chaim Kanievsky 5 weeks ago, if a person's head is all Torah, regardless of whether or not you think he's right or wrong, at least he's telling you what the Torah says. Here's what the Torah says about the subject. I don't know right, wrong, I don't know what that means. This is MS. This is the truth. This is what the Torah says about this. But if you use your own head without trying to think it through or trying to understand what the Torah is trying to tell you, well, okay, you're getting what? What Adam Sandler says? You're getting what? I don't know. Give me what Arnold Schwarzenegger says? That's even worse. Warren Polish, yeah. I didn't even know he still exists. I mean, what are you getting? You're getting what Oprah says? You're getting Oprah. Like, you're speaking out, oh, here's Trent and Oprah. Like, what does that mean? Timtum HaLev is the inability to say to yourself, I can understand the Chumash. And of course, if you sit there and watch a movie, or you sit there and you watch TV, or you sit there and you eat tons, and I don't mean to destroy this, but you sit there and you eat a ton of pizza and you drink a ton of Coke and eat a ton of ice cream, you think you're going to get shot in Tostos? Tostos eat bread and water, maybe a potato, but like a little bit of starch. That's it. I mean, his mind was so clarified to the point where he was able to understand what the Torah was trying to tell him at all times. You can't go into these things. That's why in Yom Kippur you got to fast. Because in order to clarify your mind, to get yourself all in there, you have to sometimes just get rid of everything. Just throw everything out. Just get rid of everything. I love Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, but I understand the Timtum HaLev that it causes me. I understand that that's a problem, and this is something that I'm eventually going to have to work on. Listen to this line. I do mean a taiva, but I also mean the fact that the food is gone inside you. The food itself does something to you. I'll explain it a little bit further. I have two examples, and then I'm going to go into the idea. There's a muscle the Chafetz Chaim gives to a guy who owns a besamim shop. A guy who owns a shop full of the best smelling spices in the entire town. So one day, he needed to get his shoe fixed. So he went to a tanner. A guy who redoes leather and everything like that. He went into the shop. Now, tanneries are unbelievably bad smelling because it's rotting carcasses with the leather and everything like that. Especially back then, it was just a disgusting smell. The guy who worked in this besamim shop walked into this tannery. He took one whiff and he was like, oh my gosh, he couldn't stay there for a second. He ran outside and said, I can't stand that smell. It's disgusting in there. I can't do it. The guy lost his shop and became very, very poor. Became very, very poor. He ended up going into another line of business. He became a tanner. And he got so used to the leathers and the skins that he was working with that eventually he didn't notice any bad smell at all. He just got used to it after a while. After a while, he thought he was born in a tannery. Somebody comes in and says like, oh, that's a terrible smell. He'd just be like, what do you mean a terrible smell? What's wrong with it? This is a great smell. He just got used to it after a while. 5 years ago, he couldn't stand to walk into the store, but now he doesn't even know there's something wrong with it. Doing something even once, says the Chafetz Chaim, putting something into your body takes away a little bit of that machshava. Killing brain cells, I don't think that's what it's really referring to. Killing spiritual DNA cells. Let's call it that way. It's killing your spiritual DNA, not giving you the ability to think things through. Says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, he was asked to Shiloh, what if you throw it up? Does that still cause Timtum HaLev? You took in something that wasn't kosher, and you gag yourself. You gag yourself and you throw it all up. Is that still Timtum HaLev? Says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, yes. Because the problem is the achila, not the absorbing. He says the achila is the problem. I don't know how this works, but he says the achila is the problem, and the immediate absorption maybe, and not the fact that it's inside. Maybe it's the taste. Oh, you're saying that. Maybe that's what it's referring to. So Rav Chaim was asked, so what do you do? Let's say you eat something that's awesome. So what do you do? Said Rav Chaim Kanievsky, learn Hilchos Machlos Asuros in the Rambam. The Rambam Hilchos Machlos Asuros, those things that are Asur. Learn through the Halachos. Go through and go through every single one. Do one after the other, after the other, after the other. Go through the Halachos. That's the only way to fix yourself up when it comes to this sin. And he told over a story. He told this over. And Rechaim said, this is what happened to me once. There was a bachur that came to me and said, a 90-year-old man, it's different, who came to me and told me that he was never able to learn Gemara. He lived in Europe, and he was never able to learn Gemara. And he said he doesn't understand why he can't learn Gemara. So Chaim Kievsky said to him, tell me, have you never been able to learn Gemara? Was there ever a time where you were able to learn Gemara? The 90-year-old man thought, and he said, yes. When I was much younger, my father hired a malame for me, hired a private tutor for me, and the private tutor taught me for a certain amount of time, and I was able to get Gemara very, very well. I understood it very, very well, and I learned it, and I did it well, and I went through it, and I was able to get it. Rechaim said, when did that stop? So he told him, I remember there was one Shavuos where I went back to yeshiva, I went back with this malamed right afterward, and I remember after that I could never understand a single word of Gemara. I could do Chumash, I could do Navi, I could do certain things in Halacha, but I could never learn Gemara. I can't learn Gemara. Tell me, does this sound like a malady, a sickness that affects, I don't know, 90% of Americans, that they can't learn Gemara, they can't stand Gemara? To learn Chumash, to learn Navi, to learn, I don't know, Halacha or two, to do a Mishnah Berurah, that they can do. But Gemara, the whole process of going from one to the other, it affects all women. I mean, there's something there. Is there something there? I know, that's why I said it. What is it? Says Rechaim. So, what happened that Shavuos? Did anything happen that Shavuos that you can remember? So the guy said, you know, that Shavuos was the first time that I ever tasted Dover Acher, which is known as Chazir, pig. One of his friends had fed him pig, and he'd had it for the first time, and he ate it, and he thought it was really good. And he said, each time, you know, once in a while I mess up, and I eat it once in a while. He said, Rechaim Kanievsky, that's the reason why. You've never been able to understand Gemara because you once ate a bit of Chazir. And because of that pig, you weren't able to understand it. So he said to him, just because a little bit of Chazir, that's it? He said, on your level, that's what it was. And that little bit of Chazir is it. So he said, what can I do? He said, you're 90 years old. Rechaim Kanievsky told him, fast for one day. The guy said, I'm 90, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. Chaim Kanievsky said, he left me, I don't know if he did it. But he said, any bachur in yeshiva who says that he can't learn, he can't understand Gemara, he doesn't know what's going on in Gemara, he says it's because of this. He's eating something that he shouldn't be eating. He should check what he's eating, look through what he's eating, and go through it again, and then he'll be able to understand Gemara. Until that point, he won't be able to understand Gemara. Listen, this is Rechaim Kanievsky. I won't tell you this is absolute. This is Torah speaking, and a person maybe should try that. If a person doesn't like Gemara, if he's not enjoying the Gemara that he's doing, I don't care if it's Bava Kama, Zvachim, Chulin, it could be anything. Whatever you're learning, if you're not enjoying it, maybe check on something you're eating. Maybe you're drinking too much. Maybe you're eating too much. Maybe try to change something around. See what happens. See if anything happens. See what ends up happening with it. Here we go. You know what? I'm going to skip this for now. What time we got? Okay. You know, the Hasida, the stork, is called the Hasida, says Rashi, because Osa Chesed im Chavrusel. It does kindness with its friends. So everybody asks the same exact question. They all ask the following. They say, listen, does kindness with its friends? That's a great thing. So why is it a tummy bird? A tummy bird means there's something bad about it. What's bad about a bird that does chesed with its friends? How could that be bad? So all the Baalei Musar say, I've seen this in maybe 7 Svarim. Everybody says the exact same line. Because it only does chesed with its friends. But it doesn't do chesed with people that it doesn't like. A bird that doesn't do chesed with anything, just only with the birds that it likes, that's a problem. I don't know if this is a stork or this whatever. Say the exact same thing about the Racham. The Racham has mercy. It has mercy. Why is that a bad bird? That's a great name. That should be the name of a kosher bird, a Racham. No, it only has mercy for those of its family, those of its min. But it doesn't have any mercy on animals that are not of its min. Because of that, that bird cannot be a kosher bird. They ask the following. See, wait a second. That's still called chesed, right? There's a Gemara, there's a Yerushalmi. In Bava Metzia, Parak Gimel, Halacha Hey, it says the following, by achbarin, by rats. Rats are known as Rishayim of the animal world. The Rishayim of the animal world. And I can think of a lot of different reasons why they would be called Rishayim. They're good, great pets, great pets. Rishayim of the animal world, though, and they bite often. So the Gemara asks, why are they known as Rishayim of the animal world? Says the Gemara, says Yerushalmi, the reason why is because whenever it finds food, it calls to its friends and has them come and join it. It wants all of its friends to come and join it to be able to eat. So, Rav Chaim Kanievsky was asked, I don't get it. The Chasida does chesed im chabrosah by giving its food to its friends. But the rat is known as a rasha because it's giving its food to other animals? I mean, that's a chesed. Why is that a problem? And in fact, it doesn't say to its friends, the rat gives to every rat. So if it gives to every rat, even its enemies, that's a great thing. Why is that a bad thing? Rav Chaim Kanievsky answers, just so simple, and you probably already thought of the answer, but it's just a lesson that has to be learned from such a thing. Simply put, what's the chassidah eating? The chassidah is eating hefker food. Food that's out there in the fields. Food that's out there in the middle of nowhere. To share food that in theory is now yours, because you found it. It should be yours. To share that with your friends, that's a chassidah. But the rat takes food from other people. The rat is stealing food. To steal food from Yenim, from another person, and to do chesed by giving it out to other people, like Robin Hood, well, that's not a chesed. That's rishus. That's evil. And even though the mouse is not doing, he doesn't have a mind to be able to do it purposely, that he's becoming a rush, he's doing it on purpose, but the animal is made with such a nature that's a natural tendency to do evil. A natural tendency to do evil. That means that it's an evil animal to begin with, and it always has that rishus. Here's the deal. Certain people are the chassidah, and they might be tameh right now, because they only do chassidah with their friends. They only do certain things about the within themselves. Certain bnei Yisrael are like that. It's just hard for them to build themselves out. They're chassidah, and there's no question they do great things. But they're still tameh birds. There's still so much more that they can grow with. There's still tummy birds, there's still a little bit tummy. Still what that you have to work on. So you want to be a real chassid, you don't want to be a chassidah, you want to be a chassid, you got to build yourself up. You got to start doing chassid with anybody that you see. Start doing chassid for those people that you actually dislike, that you don't want to have anything to do with. But there are other people who are right now in Akbar, who are just rats. Who are just rats. And what they're all about is they're just reshayim. They want to share, but they want to share with people things that they shouldn't be getting in the first place. Things that they really shouldn't have. You have to rethink yourself somehow and like re-gear yourself. What's the best thing for me to do? Is the best thing for me to do this or that? And start thinking to yourself, what's the best thing? What does that Kadosh Baruch Hu really want from me? That's the lesson of the Chassidah versus the Achbar. That's also the lesson of what you can have with Team Tum Alev. Of being the Tamtin Alev and understanding what a Kadosh Baruch wants you in that way. That's also the lesson of what it means that Bnei Yisrael, once they start to sin, go all the way down. Worse than anybody else than you can possibly imagine. Just swim. Just think of swimming in the canal. Just think of that. Use that as your example. That's why I brought it up. Thank you. Also, bring yourself even further. Bring yourself down to an idea that if a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you don't try working on it, then Mida Keneged Mida kicks in. And eventually, Kadosh Baruch Hu will remember. Remember that story of the Chafetz Chaim and his perfect teeth. Remember Rav Yonis and Eifshitz and the 3,000 golden. And remember the idea of Rav Moshe and Rav Moshe. The Rav Moshe Reichman and Rav Moshe Sternbach of what happened when they did it. That's the idea of Mida Keneged Mida, and that's the idea behind this parsha. Guys, have a good Shabbat.